We're doing Shmuel Beis, we're holding the 17th chapter. And because we had entered probably the most difficult chapters of the book of Shmuel, the last few weeks we slowed down to a snail's pace of about a chapter each session, and now I want to pick up the pace again so we could get to 4 or 5 chapters each session the way we're supposed to go. So we're holding the 17th chapter, and we had seen that David's top advisor Achitophel had taken sides with Avshalom. And Achitophel was so smart that the Navi says his advice was like asking God for advice. And Achitophel was the grandfather of Bathsheba bat Eliam bat Achitophel, who Achitophel Giloni. And he had it in from David, for David, ever since David took Bathsheba and ever since David had his granddaughter's husband killed. And now Achitophel sees his chance. He joins forces with Avshalom. And he gives Avshalom that pivotal piece of advice to take David's 10 wives on the rooftop and openly take them into a tent. Ki ata asita basetel, David was foretold by the prophet. Vani aseh neged kol Yisrael neged haShamesh. God had told David in the curse as the punishment for what David did with Bathsheba, that God said, you did it in hiding, and you did it, so to speak, where no one could see, and I'll do it where everyone can see. And that's what God had foretold David, and that's what in fact happened here. That Avshalom took David's 10 pilagshim up on the rooftop, and from that moment on, he forbade them upon David. Achitophel gives him advice. He tells him, once you do that, everyone will know that you're never making up with your father. And now Achitophel tells Avshalom, let me take 12,000 men. We'll chase after David tonight. We'll catch up to him when he's wiped out. And when we attack, everyone will run, because as it is, people aren't 100% loyal to him. People can't be so confident that it's worth staying with David when they know that there's a rebellion brewing and most of the forces are on our side. And Achitophel's advice is 100% correct. We know from our sages that even David's chief general, his nephew, Yoav, would have joined Avshalom's forces, but he missed it. Like, if he would have had it his way, he was thinking, I should switch sides. So even David's chief general is thinking of switching sides, but sticks with him, his nephew, Avshalom. He's thinking of switching to his cousin's side, to Avshalom's side. And Achitophel gives him this great piece of advice, let me attack. Now, Avshalom and the worthless elders that were with him all thought it was good advice. But David had left behind his good friend Hushai Ha'arki, and he told Hushai, you have to undo Achitophel's advice. And and David's prayer had been, God, sakel na atzat Achitophel Hashem. Please undo Achitophel's advice. And so Hushai knows that whatever Achitophel's advising, he's got to say the opposite. Because Achitophel must be right, he must be giving good advice, so he's got to go the exact opposite route. So the first thing Hushai says, you know, this time Achitophel's advice isn't so good. Hushai tells him, look, you know your father, you know his men, they're very brave warriors, and now they're bitter. They're like a bear that just lost its child out in the field. You know, if you ever want to get killed, just walk between a bear and its cub. Like a bear will do anything once it thinks its cub is in danger. So too, David now and his men, after what you've done, your father is a man of war. He knows how to handle a situation like this. For sure, he's not among his men. For sure, he's hiding somewhere else. Achitophel's advice was, you attack, everyone will scatter, and you'll kill David. For sure, David is not among them. He'll be hiding somewhere. When you try to attack, his men will be prepared. They'll ambush you. You don't have all the forces ready. What's the first thing that'll happen? You'll lose the first battle. And then you're going to have trouble gathering the people to war, because everyone's going to hear that you lost the first battle. People are going to think, well, maybe we shouldn't join Avshalom. Maybe he isn't going to win. Maybe he'll make up with his father. What you have to do now is, you have momentum. Gather a strong army. And then, you haven't yet proven yourself, but people will want to join you. You see, people are joining you. The rebellion's going well. Once you have a tremendous army, so wherever David is hiding, you'll be able to take him. Even if he's within a city, you'll have you'll have amassed such a great force that will take down the wall of the city and will destroy David. But if you go now, then you lose the chance of gathering the Jewish people behind you, because no one's guaranteeing you you'll win the war, and guaranteed that David is prepared for your attack and he's not hiding with his men. He's sleeping somewhere else. We know the truth. Truth was, David was with his men. They weren't prepared to fight a battle. They didn't have a horse. They didn't have anything to ride on. They didn't have food. David was barefoot. They weren't ready for a war. If Avshalom would have attacked that night, David would have been dead. Avshalom would have had the throne. And Achitophel's advice was the best advice. But God had wanted that Achitophel's advice would not be accepted, and God made it that Hushai's advice seemed better. And everyone said, this time Hushai did better than Achitophel. He gave better advice. Now, Achitophel is a very wise man. And Achitophel had been with Avshalom in the planning of the rebellion. And Achitophel knew that Avshalom has his chance now. And if Avshalom waits, Avshalom is not going to win. So Achitophel sees that his advice isn't accepted. He packs his bags and leaves. And in a second, we'll get back to where Achitophel was. Meanwhile, Hushai goes to the two Kohanim Gedolim who were left behind. Their sons were the two messenger boys who were going to pass word to David. Hushai goes to Tzadok and Avyosar and he tells them, look, Achitophel advised Avshalom to attack his father right away. And I advised that we should wait and amass a stronger army. I don't know. Maybe after I walk out of that castle, someone's going to leak to Avshalom that I gave him bad advice because I'm trying to save David. So please send word right now to David that he has to run. He can't wait around tonight. Because if Avshalom might, behind my back, really take Achitophel's advice, and then David's a dead man. So send word to David that he has to run. And Yehonasan and Achimatz were standing outside where people used to launder their woolen clothing. They used to stamp on it with their feet, Ein Rogel. And, you know, wool, our wool today doesn't shrink so much. But it used to be, up until not a long time ago, that when you'd launder wool, so it would shrink. If you'd ever launder your tzitzis, you'd have to stretch them out so they don't shrink. So once upon a time, they used to do that by stepping on them. That was called Ein Rogel, the place where they'd step to stretch out the wool after they were laundering it. And the two sons, Yonas and Nachimatz, were out there. A maid went out there, so she looks like she's going to do the laundry. She went out and gave them word, and they started heading out to David. But if they would have been seen within the city, then they wouldn't have made it out. Now, even so, someone saw them. Someone saw them hear a message from the maid and ran back and told Avshalom that word was sent out to David. So Avshalom sends his men and they give chase after these two lads. And they come to a place in Bahurim and there's a well there. And they climb down the well and the woman lays out over the well. She lays out the like a curtain as though she's laying out there, as though it's a table that she's laying on it, ground up wheat kernels to dry. And when the men come, so they see a table with a tablecloth and kernels lying out there to dry, so they don't think there's a well underneath, they don't check there, and that's how they get away. And when Avshalom's men pass, they come out and they continue going to David. And they warn David that he better run. And that night, David and his men cross the Jordan. Now they're leaving Israel. They're going into the eastern side of the Jordan. And by morning, no one's left. Achitophel sees that Avshalom won't take his advice. Achitophel sees that Avshalom is taking Hushai's advice. He's detaining, he's gathering a stronger force. And Achitophel knows that that's bad advice and that Avshalom will not succeed. So Achitophel goes home. He gathers all his family. He writes a will. He explains to them what's going to be. And he commits suicide. Achitophel, the wisest man, knew that it's over. At this point, Achitophel already foresaw it was over. And we have a tradition that Achitophel doesn't have a chelek l'olam haba.
That what?
Achitophel doesn't have a portion in the world to come. So some want to say it's because he committed suicide. Yeah, if a person commits suicide knowingly, then they don't have a portion in the world to come. Avshalom gathers his men, and he's coming after David to the other side of the Jordan. And he takes one of his cousins, another nephew of David's, named Amasa. Now Amasa's father was called Yeser. Amasa's mother was called Avigal. Avigal was David's sister. David had a sister named Tzruya. David had a sister named Avigal. And now we have a situation where David's chief general is Yoav. And Avshalom's chief general is Amasa. We have cousins as chief generals fighting one another. Well, it's no surprise. You have a father and a son fighting against one another. David, son of Shalom, is heading the rebellion trying to kill David. And when David reaches Machanayim, so the Navi records the wealthy people who greeted him and brought him food. And what's interesting here is that we're going to see later on that one of the wealthy people that helped David was Barzillai HaGiladi. Barzillai lived out there in Gilad. And Barzillai was very wealthy. And when David returns to Israel after winning the war, so David tells Barzillai, come and I'll sustain you throughout your days. And Barzillai says, I'm so old, I can't taste the difference between good food, bad food. You'll have beautiful music playing, I won't know the difference. By the time I cross the Jordan and make it home with you, I'll be dead. There's no point in my coming. And Chazal asks, what was Barzillai so old for? He couldn't tell anything, he's such an old man. So Chazal say Barzillai had many, many women. He had many, many wives. And because he spent so much time with women, Chazal say one of the things that happens when a person spends a lot of time with women is, I mean, spending time intimately, so then he gets old earlier and he loses his ability to enjoy this world. It's interesting that today science is saying differently. Today they're saying it's very healthy for a person to be with his wife on a high frequency very often. But our tradition, which is also brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that it's unhealthy. That if a person does it a lot, it's not healthy for him. So all these wealthy people, some of them weren't the finest people in the world. But nonetheless, they were wealthy and they were supportive of David. And David divides his men. He divides Yoav, Avishai, and Ittai Hagiti. Yoav and Avishai are two brothers, his nephews. And Ittai Hagiti we encountered before. He came with his men.
Where was Barzillai's servant sent? Did he send back with David?
Kimhan. We'll get to that. One place is called Kimhan, the other place Kimhan. And Barzillai, it wasn't a servant, it was his son. Yeah, but we didn't get there yet. David tells the people, I'm coming with you. Clearly, David knew the best idea is that he shouldn't go. Because if David gets killed, the war is over. There's no point in fighting the war. But David feels like, how can I send my men out to war and I won't be with them? So he tells them, I'm coming with you. And this is an opening for them to say, no, you're not. And that's what they say. They tell him, no, because if we run, no one's going to care. This isn't the war. They're not trying to kill us. They're not trying to conquer our land. They're just trying to get you. We're better off with you staying in the city, and your prayers are better for us than a fortified city. And David says, fine, I'll do what you're saying. And he stays by the gate, seeing everyone off. David has all his men camped out there ready to leave, and he calls the generals, and he asks them before all the men, he says, do me a favor. Have compassion for the child of Shalom. Now, Shalom is well over 40 years old. He's already murdered his brother Amnon. He's already gone out to Gat, to his grandfather in Geshur. He's already come back and formed this whole rebellion. But yet, when David wants compassion, he calls him a Na'ar. Do me a favor, have compassion for the Na'ar for Avshalom. And everyone heard David command this. They go out to war. And they're fighting a war on the eastern side of the Jordan. Now let's remind ourselves, who has a portion on the eastern side of the Jordan? Reuven, Gad, and half of Menashe. The forest is called the forest of Ephraim, which is a little bit wondersome. Ephraim has no portion on the eastern side of the Jordan. So our sages tell us that when Yeshua divided the land, he made different deals. He made different social agreements between the people. Like one of his agreements was that if I walk by your tree, and your tree has a young branch growing out of it, so I should be allowed to cut off that branch and use it to plant a new tree in my field. If it doesn't harm your tree, you're not losing much by it. I'm gaining a lot by it. So he made a social contract between the people where each one would be willing to give the other one certain things to help the people prosper, all kinds of different agreements where we'd forego for one another, the different tribes and different people. This was an agreement signed by everyone, so to speak, a social contract. So one of the agreements was that we'd let one another send our sheep to our wild pastures to graze. So Ephraim on the western side of the Jordan used to send their sheep to graze in this forest on the eastern side of the Jordan. And that's why the forest was known as the forest of Ephraim. And God sent the wild animals of the forest to destroy Avshalom's troops. And Yoav and his men and the people on David's side attacked Avshalom's troops. And they destroyed them. He had greater than 20,000 people killed. Avshalom is riding his mule. He passes under a branch, and the branch catches his hair. Now, the fact that Avshalom had long hair is something that's wondersome. Once a year, he'd shave himself bald. How much hair could you grow in a year? So Avshalom had amazing hair. The Gemara tells us that God made certain people be blessed to be godlike in different things. Avshalom was godlike in his hair. So he had extra long hair, and his hair got caught in the tree. And he's hanging in the tree, and David's men see him. So our sages ask, why didn't he just take out his knife and cut himself down? So our sages have a tradition that Avshalom did that. He took out the knife from the sheath, he took out his sword, and he was about to cut off his hair. And he looked down, and he saw perdition open beneath him. So he sees hell, and he's hanging by his hair. And he has a choice, where does he want to go? So he's not cutting his hair. So he's standing there hanging by his hair in the tree, and a lad comes to Yoav, and he tells him, you know, I saw Avshalom, he's hanging by his hair in the tree. So Yoav says, that's very exciting. Why didn't you kill him? I would have given you a reward. And the lad tells him, you're telling me in theory, if I would have killed him, you'd give me a reward. If I would have in my hands 10 times the reward you're promising me, I wouldn't do it, because I heard the king tell you not to harm Avshalom. So if I would have done it, I would have been committing suicide. I'm not doing that. And Yoav says, okay, I'm not going to ask you again. Yoav takes 3 spears, sticks it in Avshalom's heart. Remember, we discussed that Avshalom stole 3 hearts, the heart of Israel, the heart of the high court, and the heart of his father. And that's why he was punished, that he got 3 spears in his heart. And Avshalom is still alive. So Yoav tells his 10 lads to surround him and hit him till he's dead. And that's what they do. And we have on tradition that he was killed this way because of the 10 wives that he took from his father. They took Avshalom, they threw him in the forest, and they made a pile of stones on top of him, and everyone ran, they won the war. And Yoav did this because Yoav saw that people were getting killed. He said, once we finish Avshalom off, the war's over. Yoav said, we have to save everyone else's life. Avshalom had seen that he had no one left to hold his name, and he had established, we said, a special, some kind of tower, some kind of monument in remembrance of himself called Yad Avshalom. They won the war. Now the question is, who's going to tell the king what happened? So Achimat, you remember one of those kids who was a spy? Yeah.
Who said, oh, I'm not going to listen to that advice not to tell Avshalom that he's a youth, and I'm going to go kill him myself. Who
said Yoav. His cousin, the chief general.
David's
nephew. He was the son of Tsruya, David's sister. So Achimatz, the son of the Kohen Gadol, Achimatz, who was one of the spies who came and gave David the news that he better run, he tells Yoav, let me go tell the king the good news.
The spy that was in the well.
He says, let me go tell the king the good news that God saved him from his enemies. And Yoav tells him, today isn't the day that you should be giving good news. Today you don't want to be the one giving the news because the king's son died. Notice how he represents the story. The king's son died. Yeah, doesn't say, I killed him. So Yoav tells one of the black people there, he tells him, you go run and tell the king that what you've seen. And the servant bows and runs. Achimatz again says, I don't care, let me run, I want to go. And Yoav says, what do you want to run? The king doesn't want to hear the news you have to tell him. So he's insistent, he says, nonetheless, let me go, let me run. So Yoav says, okay, you want to run. So he runs. And he passes the black man,
Cushi
is a black man, and David is sitting between the 2 gates waiting to hear news. And the lookout goes on the roof and he says, I see a man running alone. And David says, if he's running alone, then he must be giving news. And then he says, I see another man running. So the king says, okay, that's another person bringing news. So he says, I see the first guy, he's running like Achimatz. So the king says, he's a good man, he must be coming with good news. So Achimatz runs in, and the king greets him with shalom. As we've seen, it's been instituted to greet one another with peace. And he bows to the king. And he tells the king, blessed is Hashem, your God, that gave the people who wanted to take you in the hands of my master the king. And what's the first thing David says? Is there peace to the lad to Avshalom? And Achimatz is stuck. So Achimatz says, I saw everyone gathering to send a messenger, and Yoav was preparing messengers, so I just ran to be the first to give you the good news. I don't know what happened beyond that. I don't know. So the king says, okay, stand, let's see, there's another messenger coming. So the black man runs in, and he says, may my master, the king, get good news that God has judged you from all those that have come upon you. And the king says, is there peace to the land of Avshalom? And he tells him, may all your enemies be like Avshalom, anyone that's come upon you for bad. And David HaMelech blows up. David HaMelech goes up to the second floor, and he starts weeping and crying and calling out, my son Avshalom, my son Avshalom, if only I die instead of you, Avshalom, my son, and Yoav hears that David has started mourning over his son Avshalom. David's sitting Shiva over Avshalom. He took the cloak. The ancient custom was that when someone was sitting Shiva, just like a person who has tzaras, just like a person who's been ostracized, they wear the talis down to their eyes and they cover their face. Where you could, they cover their lips, they cover their mouth, as though I can't talk. Just like the Arabs go, where you could only see the eyes. That's the way it's called ituf, wrapping one's face. That's the way, that was the ancient custom of mourning.
So the Arabs are dressing like they have been set up.
So David sits in this position, and Yoav hears that David's mourning of Shalom. Now we have a halacha that if someone that's very wicked dies, we don't sit shiva over them. We sitting shiva is like condoning their actions, that we're sad that he passed away. Well, what do you mean? That the person's been wicked. Now, obviously, the halacha discusses how wicked does one have to be. All of us sin. Some of us sin once an hour, some once a minute, but we all sin. How much does one have to do in order to be considered wicked? But at this point, Yoav is shocked. How could David be mourning over his son? Now, what happens is that the people who were fighting, risking their lives for David, they all felt like losers. So they all sneak back into the camp, like they're ashamed of what they did. And Yoav comes into David's house, and he starts talking to him. Before we quote what Yoav said, let's remind ourselves of a conversation. Let's go back a few years. David had Avshalom, the same son, murdered his brother Amnon. And then Avshalom fled out to Geshur and spent 3 years there. And Yoav knew that David really wants to bring him back, but David isn't sure it's a good idea. So Yoav hires this woman from Tekoa to come and tell him a whole story. And when he gives ruling on the story, she tells him, and why don't you apply the same ruling to your son Avshalom and let him come back? And then David says, tell me, did Yoav put you up to this? And she says, yeah. And David says, okay, tell him he could bring back Avshalom. And then Yoav comes and bows and he says, I thank you, my master, the king, for now I know that you love me, you're willing to accept my advice. And over there we marveled at the amount of derech eretz Yoav teaches us one is supposed to have of a king. What was Yoav doing? He was helping David arrive at the conclusion that he wanted to. Yoav had no interest in this, Yoav wasn't gaining anything. But yet, when David accepts his advice, so Yoav sets this woman up to help David arrive at the right conclusion. So Yoav comes and he says, thank you, now I know that you love me. Why? Because you were willing to do what you wanted to do all along. So we marveled there at how much respect Yoav shows us one is supposed to have of a king. This same Yoav is now going to step up and talk to David. We just have to remember that when Yoav is speaking, we're talking about a tremendous halachic force. We're talking about a person whose home was compared to a desert. He was such a big tzaddik that he was known that his soup kitchen was available to everyone. Poor people from all over would come. It was known like the desert. Just like Rabbi Machlis today, everyone knows you want to come for a Shabbos meal, you could just walk in. Yoav's home was known that way all week long. That they, just like a desert, whenever you want, you could walk into the desert, no one's stopping you. That was Yoav's home. He had a 24-hour day, 365 days a year, I guess 364, not Yom Kippur. He had a running soup kitchen. Everyone who wanted could come and get food. That was his house. Yoav was a tremendous tzaddik. And when Yoav hears this, he holds that what David is doing is tremendously wrong. And he walks in and he tells David, today you have shamed all your servants who saved your life. You have shamed the soul of your children and the soul of your wives and your pilagshim, because you have loved your enemy and you have hated those that love you. Those that stood by you are ashamed, and those that were your enemies, you're lamenting. Today you've revealed that if all of us would be dead and Avshalom would be alive, then you'd be happy. Because you're saying all of us have to be ashamed because we killed Avshalom. Notice, Yoav has confidence. He killed Avshalom, but he's not scared. He walks in and he gives David this speech. And he tells David, now you get up and you go out and speak to your servants and comfort them. Because I swear by God that if you don't get out tonight, right now, then I will ensure that no one will remain with you tonight. And it's going to be worse for you than it ever was from the time you were a lad. And Yoav knows, Yoav's his cousin, his nephew. Yoav knows the troubles David has suffered. David is an old man. He's 67, 68 years old. This is almost the end of his life. And Yoav tells him, I'm going to ensure that it's worse than it ever was for you because you have no right to do what you're doing now. And David listens to him. So on the surface, it would seem that David concedes that Yoav's attitude is right. Our sages tell us that when David called out Avshalom's name, he called him my son 8 times. The Gemara says that Avshalom was in the depths of perdition, 7 levels down. And every time David said, my son, he was pleading with heavens, he is my son and I want him out of there. And with each plea, each time he said, my son, Avshalom was raised a notch. So he was raised the 7 notches out of perdition and 1 notch into the world to come. And from here we see a concept that even after one is dead, one can move forward in the world to come. Based upon this, we give tzedakah on Yom Kippur. We give tzedakah for the deceased. Why do we give tzedakah on a Yahrzeit? That's the same concept. We say that we could give merits even to someone that's dead. Ordinarily we say, achieve your merits in this world. But relatives, children, if they want to give merits to their parents, they can do it just like David did even for his son. Here, he did it for Avshalom. So too, we could do it for other people when we give tzedakah in their name. That's why we do things le'ilui nishmas. What does le'ilui nishmas mean? To uplift the neshama. Ilui is like aliyah. We're uplifting the soul. Yeah. The lowest level of Ganim, yeah. So there are different opinions, whether he got him to the top of Ganim or he said one more time to get him into Gan Eden. I think so. If you want, after class, remind me, we'll look it up. It's a Gemara in the end of the first chapter of Sota. I didn't get a chance to look it up. Rashi quotes the Gemara the way I said. Rashi quotes that he said it 7 times and he took him out of the seven levels of Gehenna, and the 8th time brought him into Gan Eden. That's what Rashi says.
So, the thing that troubles me is that one of the requests that David gave Shlomo was to take out Yoav.
We'll get to that.
So, when did he become no longer a tzaddik between this point?
Who said he wasn't a tzaddik? Yoav was a tzaddik till the day he died.
So, why did David want to take him out?
That we'll discuss. We'll get there. Mitzvah next week or the week after. Yeah. Dov, you want some? No. Okay. Avshalom was his son, yeah. David goes out, the people greet him, and the tribes were discussing how they'll bring David back. David sent word to the elders of Yehuda, why should you be last to bring me back? Send word to Amasa, my nephew, that I'm making him chief general in place of Yoav from now on. And the tribe of Yehuda decide we're bringing David back. David comes to the Jordan to cross over to come back into the land of Israel. And when he comes to the Jordan, there's one man who knows that he's a dead man, and that's Shimi ben Gera. When David was leaving, so Shimi had ran after him and cursed him out and thrown stones at him. So David had said, it must be God told him to do this. I can't kill him. If such a great man does this, it must be God told him to do it. But now that David's coming back, David knows God didn't tell him to do this. So then, of his own accord, he came and cursed me out. So Shimi knows that he better do something. So he gets 1,000 men from the tribe of Binyamin, from Shaul's tribe, to join him. And when David comes to cross over into Israel, there's a whole crowd there. Everyone's coming to welcome him back. Shimi jumps forward and bows before him. And he says, please forgive me, don't hold it against me, I've sinned against you, don't take it to heart, I know that I have sinned, and that's why I came first to greet you on your way back into Israel. And Shimi was telling him something between the lines. Like good politicians, they were talking between the lines. So Shimi was telling him, hey, I'm here first. What does he mean to say by that? If you kill me, then everyone that was part of the rebellion will say, we can't join back with David. You're going to make it that you're going to set up the stage for another rebellion. If you want everyone to come back peacefully, you have to accept me back. So Avishai, David's nephew who was there, the first time Shimi killed him, cursed him. So he said, what, just because he's apologizing, he won't be killed? He cursed a king who was anointed by God. How could he not be killed for what he did? And David turns to him, and he tells him a line which reveals to us what Binyamin was alluding to earlier, what's hiding in the depths of David's heart. He turns to Avishai and he says, what do I have? What's with me and you, you sons of Tzeruya, my sister? You want to mess me up today? Today I'm going to kill someone. Today I know that I'm accepted as king because a man like him, who is my arch enemy, is accepting me. I'm going to ruin that by killing him? So he tells Shimi, don't worry, you won't die. And Shimi says, promise me. Shimi knows what he's doing. Shimi says, today he can't kill me. But what will he do tomorrow? So Shimi says, promise me. So David sees he's got to. So he says, I promise you, I will not put you to death. I won't put you to death. But 2 years later, when David's on his deathbed, we're going to discuss what he leaves behind, what he tells Shlomo to do with Shimi. Now, if you recall, when David was fleeing out of Jerusalem, he had nothing. And the first person to greet him was the servant Tziva, the servant of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth was that son of Shaul whom David had sustained, that son of Shaul who was a cripple. And Tziva had said to David, my master is waiting for you and Avshalom to fight it out. Hopefully you'll both be dead. Right, so it seems like he was the son of Yonatan. Over here he's called the son of Shaul. It's a good point. So Mephibosheth, now that David's coming back, Mephibosheth comes. And Mephibosheth hasn't showered, and Mephibosheth hasn't shaven. He's been in prayer and mourning all the time since David left. And when David comes towards Jerusalem, Mephibosheth comes towards him. And the first thing David tells him is, why didn't you come with me when I was leaving Jerusalem? And Mephibosheth tells him, my servant tricked me. I told him, prepare the saddle, the donkey, let's go help David with all the food. And he took all the food and took my cattle and brought it to you, and he lied to you and he told you that I'm waiting for you to die. And I know you're like an angel of God. You'll know the truth. You'll do what's good in your eyes. Tziva had done that. Tziva had lied. And he tells him, I know that my father's family always tried to kill you, and you've always helped me. What else can I ask of you? What can I ask of you? But the truth is, I wanted to help you. But I'm a cripple, you know, I couldn't do it. My slave tricked me. And David tells him, why are you speaking? Why speak anymore? I've decided. You and Tziva will split everything. And the question is, what halachic basis was there for this that deserves at least one class on its own? Just to analyze what was David's halachic ruling here. But we discussed that a heavenly voice came out and said, that's the way you're ruling? He's a cripple, his servant tricked him, and you don't verify the bottom line what really happened here? You're just saying, okay, so we'll split all your assets? Okay. A heavenly voice came out and said, you said Mephibosheth and Tziva will split the assets. I say Rechavim and Yeravim will split the kingdom. And from that point, there was a heavenly decree that the Davidic dynasty would not rule over all of Israel. The kingdom would be split.
So it was a punishment for David's...
Correct. At this point, according to this tradition, according to this Gemara, it was a punishment for David's misjudgment here. And Mephibosheth says, you know what, I'm so happy you made it back in peace, he could have everything. Barzillai comes to help him cross the Jordan, and David offers him to join him, and Barzillai is 80 years old, and he tells him, I can't enjoy anything you're offering me, let my son Kimham come with you. And David tells him, okay, bring Kimham with me, and I'll sustain him. And Kimham comes with David, and David is headed back to his city. The chapter ends with an argument between Israel and the tribe of Judah. Why did you take the main stance in bringing David back? And the tribe of Yehuda speaks very forcefully, we have first rights to David. Now, if you recall, the seeds of Avshalom's rebellion began when Avshalom told the people of Israel, David has it in for you. He's playing favorites with his own tribe. He's judging to the benefit of the tribe of Yehuda. I would be better for you. And Israel bought into that. And now when David comes back, we see the same seeds being planted. That the tribe of Yehuda gives him favorite treatment, and David accepts it from them. And the rest of Israel says, hey, wait a second, is he all of our king or your king? And the tribe of Yehuda doesn't relent. They say, no, we're closer to him, we're not asking him for any favors, we're just his family, so of course we bring him back. And that's why we're going to see next week that David just makes it back and a new rebellion starts. David is going to get back to Jerusalem, and when he gets back, the first thing he has to contend with is the next rebellion by Sheva ben Bichri. And that's Bezrat Hashem where we're going to pick up next week. Sheva ben Bichri is from the tribe of Binyamin.